Listeners like you make living on Earth possible each week. Please contribute today by clicking on the donate link to the left of the page. And thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwin. This week on our holiday special, there's no environmental news, just stories. Our guests today are storytellers who came from the Middle East and Africa and who now live in America. They speak a variety of languages and share French as well as English. And we'll turn now to Yasir Shadley for another story. Yasir, I understand this is a very personal story about seeking the answer to a question planted inside of you back in your childhood in Morocco.
In my childhood, the division between men and women was very clear. Women, they get with each other. Men are with each other. And the houses are ruled by women. And around mid-afternoon, all the ladies, they get together to have their cafe latte and mint tea and cookies, and they make themselves, and they gather together like that. And when the ladies came to my mother's house, my mother wants to show the ladies something funny so they can laugh. And she said, "Yasir, where do you come from?" And I just respond proudly, "I come from my father." "And where did your sister, Najia, where she come from?" I say, "She comes from you." And then everybody laughs, and I don't know why they were laughing. I was so serious about it, because I knew I was going to be a man, I don't know how, and I knew my sister was like my mother. Years passed like that, and my mother gave birth to my brother, and I said, "Oh, you're the one who gave birth to me then." And then I asked her, "Why don't you ask me first, do you want to come to this world? Yes or no? Then leave the choice to me, then I can choose to come here or not to come." And I was telling my mother, "If you ask me, do you want to come here, yes or no, I probably will be happier to say no, I don't want to come here." I had this question, and the nagging question, she said, "Not me, so ask Allah. I'm not, you came through me, but I didn't. Allah brought you here." And so that changed my question. Now I am focusing on why Allah brought me here. That question pops up, and I was just maybe 8, 9. So I asked people, and they think I was crazy to ask such questions. So I kept it with me. So I used to go to the country to help my grandfather in his farm. And my job there was to trim the hoofs of the donkeys when they are young, because their hoofs keep them growing and growing if we don't trim them. And then also used to ride them bareback so they can get used to carrying people. Of course, the teenager donkeys, they never like to have somebody on top of them. So they rebel, and we have this fight between each other. And I was a teenager, the donkey is a teenager also. And then at the end, we become one, we become friends and stuff like that. And then I took my little donkey all the way down where there is nobody, and I look around, I can see only the horizon all over the place. I said, "Okay, now I'm going to ask this question to Allah." And then I get down from my donkey and I spoke loud. I said, "Why did you bring me here?" Like that. And then I could hear the answer, very gentle, saying to me, "Just to witness, that's all." That's a very simple answer. But I didn't like that answer. It was too short and didn't have any point. I wanted to ask if I am here for a real purpose, doing something, but to witness, what is that? Then I kept that idea or that answer in me. And then I went back to Casablanca. And near Casablanca, we have an ocean that has nice waves, and the water is warm and clear, so clean. And I used to go there to do body surfing, just surf with the waves, and I enjoyed doing that, and I enjoyed teaching that to all my neighbors, all the kids. I swim with the Moroccan national team. So I was able to swim fast enough to catch the wave and then ride with the wave. It was such an enjoyable thing. And then one day I went there, the ocean was flat like a rug. There was no waves. I walked all the way, 1 hour walking to the beach, and there is no waves. What should I do? So I decided I'm going to lay on my back and feel those little, very tiny waves going under my back and enjoy that. So I floated on my back and feel the water and listen to the vibration of the water sounds, and I'm enjoying that position like that, with my arms way open, my legs in a V so I can float and look at the sky, and I close my eyes. While I was doing that, I felt my body growing out of dimension, rising and rising like yeast in a bread, growing, growing, and I couldn't stop my body from growing. It was growing, growing, growing until it became as big as the whole Atlantic Ocean. And I couldn't bring myself back from that. And I felt that the ocean and me were one. And then I realized the unity of everything. There is something that is similar with me and everything else, even the ocean. At that time, those verses I was hearing made sense to me. When it says, قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ أَحَدٌ, say everything is one. Then I said, now I understand. And to witness means to look. This ocean is a treasure. Everything we see is treasure, and people are treasures also. And that's what opened for me the way toward the Sufism. That's the road for it. And that's my story. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Yasir Shadley. Now, we're speaking with Yasir Shadley. He's an imam, a musician, a storyteller from Berkeley, California. And also on the line is Firuzeh Duma. She's an Iranian-American writer of very funny books. And Firuzeh, when you heard this story about him not wanting to come here and trying to figure out why it is that we're put on Earth, what did you think of?
Well, as a writer, I have a very strong sense of destiny because when I speak to people about what I do, I mean, I mainly try to spread the idea of shared humanity through humor. And wherever I go, I travel quite a bit in the United States, I always feel like I was meant to be there saying what it is that I'm saying. Now, do I think that everybody asks themselves, why am I here? No. In fact, I wish more people asked themselves that question, because I think there are a lot of people living their lives without any introspection.
Mamadou, what about this notion of why are we here?
Yeah, I think it's a question that everybody asks himself. Like they say, you know, you live, you grow, you learn, and you know. That's where he feels the unity. We not coming in the same part of the world. Even like we're coming in different part of the world, we're still united by something.
We share French together.
Yeah, that's true.
We can speak French to each other.
Uh-huh.
That's the benefit for being colonized by the French. We have this language.
Yeah, that's true. Definitivement.
And Firuzeh, you've gone French through the altar, I guess.
Well, my husband is French, but unfortunately he's not related to Alexandre Dumas.
Oh.
That would have been a great marketing hook for me, but no. Alas, no relation.
Let me ask you, Firuzeh, I imagine getting used to holidays here in America, it might have been, well, somewhat confusing for an Iranian family new to the U.S. And you have a story celebrating the humor in that confusion as Persian culture meets American culture. Could you tell us that right now?
Okay, so when we came to America in 1972, holidays like Halloween, for instance, weren't what they are today. It was much more low-key. And we actually came to America, I believe it was late September. So when our first Halloween rolled around, we had no idea what it was. And I was in second grade, and I remember one morning, Heather Hensley's mom showed up, and she had a costume for me. Because lo and behold, there was a Halloween parade that day at school, and she had figured out that I was going to be the only kid without a costume. So next thing I know, she put this handkerchief around my head. She put a bunch of bracelets on my wrist. She gave me the sort of flowing outfit, and she said, "You're a gypsy." Which I realize now is politically incorrect, but at the time it was a very, very kind thing that she did for me, because I would have been horrified to have been the only kid without a costume. So anyways, I marched around the basketball court with all the other kids, and I just assumed that was the extent of Halloween. So that night we're in our home, and somebody knocked on our door. And up to that time, nobody had ever visited us in the evening, and so we all answered the door, and it was a bunch of kids in costumes, and they all said something, and we didn't quite understand what they said, so we just kind of stood there, and they said it again, and so then one of the kids said something about wanting candy, and we were very confused, and we didn't have any candy in the house, and we said, you know, we're sorry, and we shut the door, and a few minutes later, again, somebody knocks on the door, we open it, it's, you know, a different group of kids dressed up as ghosts and hobos, and again, they said that phrase that we couldn't catch, and they said they wanted candy. And so At this point, we said, well, hold on. We don't have candy, but we have something else. Now, Iranians, we always have fruit in our house. So we went and we got the bowl of fruit that we had in the living room. And so we started giving out apples and oranges and bananas. And after a while, we actually ran out of the fruit. So my mother went to the fridge. And one thing that we Iranians always have in our house, and I can say that right now in my fridge, I have 2 pounds of this, is pickling cucumbers. So we just started handing out pickling cucumbers. And then we ran out of those. And so then we turned our porch light off. And you know, when kids knocked, we just didn't even answer it. But it wasn't until years later when I thought about that. And I thought, you know, those kids who came to our house that night must have thought we were the worst house on the block. I mean, who would give out pickling cucumbers and apples and oranges and bananas? So I just want to apologize to any kids who actually trick-or-treated in 1972 at our house, because nobody had told us that we had to buy candy. But having said that, I think having the habits that I had developed in this country, I think even if my mother had bought candy, I probably would have eaten it before Halloween. So,
yeah, Firuze, how did you deal with this waistline ultimately?
Well, ultimately, I grew up and I stopped eating junk food and I eat the way I used to in Iran.
Ah, maybe that I should try that. Maybe that would help. I understand now you just moved to Southern California from the Bay Area, and I imagine it's not so hard to find Persian food around L.A., huh?
Are you kidding? It's hard to find American food down here now.
Uh-huh.
There's great ethnic food down here. Some questionable driving skills, though, and I have to say, but half of those are my relatives, okay? So.
Now, as I understand it, there's a Persian specialty store there?
There's actually several Persian markets, but there's one near my house. And every single morning, my French husband goes to buy sangek, which is this large flatbread. My husband grew up, ironically, having fresh baguettes in Paris. And now it is just, you know, 2 sangeks later, he is completely converted.
Ah, I want to try one. I've never had one.
I'll FedEx you one if you want.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And what about those Persian pastries? Where do you get those?
There's a store here which is called Asal, which means honey. It's Asal, so it's A-S-S-A-L. So, which I probably would not have named it that if that were my store, because I think anytime you have ass in a name, it's not good. But it's crowded all the time, so that has not kept the customers away.
Okay, quick roundtable. We're just about out of time here. I'm going to start with you, Yasir. Why tell stories?
Oh, that has many, many answers in this one. Stories could be to shorten the road of somebody traveling in this journey. If they are in a dark tunnel, you can shorten the tunnel by giving them a story to get them out from that ego tunnel. And some stories are good for taking depression out from the heart. You know, sometimes when somebody is sick and you give them only water and you tell them this is some kind of medicine, and they drink it believing it's a medicine and it cures them. I don't know the name for that idea.
Oh, well, the technical name is placebo, but I think the real name is love.
Love, yes. So some stories can be a placebo. It's an art form that can break the dividing walls between people.
Mamadou, why tell stories?
In the past, telling story was a way to bring people together in the village, because every night, like, the parents will call all the kids, put them together, and tell them stories. And I think there's another way, it's a way to bridge a gap between the past and the new generation, because you got to know exactly where you come from to be able to know where you're going and where you're at.
Firuze?
Well, stories reveal our shared humanity. And we need to be reminded of that, especially these days, because so often people just know other cultures through what they see on the evening news. And of course, only bad news is news. So we sometimes forget that people from other cultures are human just like us and have the same sadnesses and joys. And as an Iranian, I feel it's very important to tell stories, because most Americans just associate bearded men and hostages, and pretty much that's about it when it comes to my native country. And for me, it's very important that people see that there's so much more, and that there is so much shared humanity. So I really look at storytelling as an instrument of peace.
Well, I wish we could keep on swapping stories, but unfortunately we're out of time. So I'd like to thank all of our storytellers today for sharing the warmth of their stories and memories with Living on Earth. Yasir Shadli.
Thank you and goodbye.
Firouzeh Dumas.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Mamadou and Sana Njai.
Thank you for letting us be part of this.
Thank you very much.
Well, since Firouzeh didn't play any music for us today, we thought we'd leave you this week with the music and voice of a talented musician from her homeland. His name is Saeed Shambesadeh, and he plays traditional folk music from the southwestern coast of Iran, which blends the sounds from his Persian, African, and Arabic roots. His specialty is the Iranian bagpipe, or Nayamban.
My name is Saeed Shambesadeh. I come from southwest of Iran, the small city called Bushehr. In our city, we have a very cultural rich music and dance. You know, in the different ceremony, we use the music. In the funeral, in the wedding, during the work. I re-adapt the ceremony on a stage. This music, it's coming from the people. I did not made it, this sound. It is the sound of the people. I am Nayamban player. This is one kind of the bagpipe of South Iran. The Nay, it is the material, it is the bamboo. And the Nay is say the true things. He can say the reality and the people, they can discover something if they listen to it. When we play, I try to be real and say the reality. And the reality of our ability is this music, literature, poetry, architecture, all of this is the reality of our nature. And I'm too happy to share this part of our reality to the world.
Living on Earth is produced by the World Media Foundation. The producer for today's program was Mitra Taj. We had help today from Noel Flatt, Tim Malone, and Tim Harris. Our technical director is Jeff Turton. You can find us anytime at loe.org and join the conversation at our Facebook page, PRI's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science. And Stonyfield Farm, organic yogurt and smoothies. Stonyfield pays its farmers not to use artificial growth hormones on their cows. Details at stonyfield.com. Support also comes from you, our listeners. The Ford Foundation, the Town Creek Foundation, the Oak Foundation, supporting coverage of climate change and marine issues. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve a chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. And Pax World Mutual Funds, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making. On the web at paxworld.com. Pax World, for tomorrow.
PRI, Public Radio International.